It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic with Hester Fuller. The phone lines to speak with Hester are open, 802-244-1777 and toll-free 1-877-291-8255. And now here's your host, Hester Fuller.
Thanks, John. And I'm very happy today to welcome my guest, Paul Dame, who is a state rep from Essex Junction and the co-chair of Rand Paul's campaign in Vermont. Yes, indeed, there is one. Filed the petition just a week ago, is that right?
Yep, week ago today, I was joined by State Representative Tom Burdett from West Rutland, who also endorsed Rand Paul, and we would have had Representative Jansen Wilhoit with us, but he was out of town. And we went last Monday, dropped off our petition, and got a call from Secretary of State the next day saying everything checked out. So Rand Paul is officially on the ballot for the Republican primary for president here in Vermont.
And we will see that name not too long from now, along with quite a few others.
Yeah.
So he's picked up a campaign and he's running against a fleet of contenders for the Republican nomination. What are the polls saying at this early stage about his candidacy?
Yeah, well, to my knowledge, I don't know that there's any polls done in Vermont, but obviously folks have, there's been a big focus this year on polls nationally and in New Hampshire and Iowa because it's been used for debate criteria. And certainly the last CNN poll that just came out on Wednesday had Rand Paul in sixth place nationally, which if the next four polls come out with the similar numbers, he'll be on the main stage in the debate, which is going to be smaller this time coming up in January. So, you know, we feel we're trending in the right direction. You know, there's I think, you know, the campaign thinks we got to take some of these polls with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. One of Senator Paul's largest contingencies of supporters are young people. And, you know, we feel like they're probably not being
They're not showing up in the samples.
Sample sizes, you know, aren't representing them well. You know, we had over 350 college organizations organized in the first 30 days of the semester.
Wow.
So in 30 days, Rand was able to organize 350 college campuses. We're up to 400 now nationwide. Three of those are here in Vermont. We've got UVM, Johnson and Castleton organized, and no other Republican. And I'm not even sure if Bernie has college organizations yet.
Yeah, we'll speak in just a minute about Bernie's campaign, but I want to remind listeners, my guest today is Paul Dame. He's a state rep from Essex Junction and a co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign in the state of Vermont. And we welcome your questions for Paul. And the phone numbers here again are 244-1777 and toll-free 877-291-8255. I want to tell our listeners and remind them of a sort of a little protocol that Mike Smith and I have sort of established. When we first invite a candidate in, it's kind of a get-to-know-you sort of visit. And so I am here with Paul. Paul is my guest, and we're going to be just listening and letting him lay out the things that I think are important for Vermonters to understand about Rand Paul's campaign. On subsequent visits, he will encounter the WDEV News face and voice that you may be would have expected today. But in our first visits, we really want to welcome him as a guest. That's the constraint on me today, but the constraint does not apply to you as a listener. Your questions, whatever they are welcome. And the numbers again are 244-1777 or 877-291-8255 to talk with Paul Dame, the state rep from Essex Junction, who is also the co-chair of Rand Paul's campaign here in Vermont, just filed a petition last Monday. Paul, we were just talking a moment ago about the small numbers of young voters who turn up in the national polls and the fact that that's a demographic that Dr. Paul tends to appeal to. There's another candidate that the young folks also find attractive, and that, of course, is Vermont's own Bernie Sanders. How does the being a co-chair of a committee in Sanders' home state affect the way you guys approach these younger voters?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think certainly there are a number of things that that lend Bernie Sanders to appeal to, I mean, and not just younger voters too, you know, but those are certainly things we're paying attention to. And there are a surprising number of places where Bernie's message and Rand's message kind of overlap that really appealed to younger voters.
Can you give me some examples?
Yeah, I think the you know, the first one that I think of is criminal justice reform. You know, Rand Paul has done bipartisan work with Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey to work on changing, you know, eliminating mandatory minimums and work at reducing some of the disparities on some of our drug laws. You know, things that Rand has talked about is you have you know, crack cocaine, which can have a 5 to 10 times higher mandatory minimum sentence than powder cocaine. And what happens is poor urban youth are using crack, and it's upper middle class white kids that are using more of the powder form, and saying that it's the same drug. We should eliminate that disparity. And he talks a lot about policing, you know, which I think is something that a lot of Vermonters, you know, have some concerns about. You know, until last week, we were going to be the only state in the country that didn't have a police shooting until what happened in Burlington last week. And so, you know, the way that enforcement's done, unfortunately, the way it works out is you've got police patrolling in, you know, lower income urban areas, and they're not patrolling, you know, in upper middle class. And that's something that, Dr. Paul has worked to introduce legislation on a federal level to eliminate mandatory minimums. We were actually at Castleton University now, telling folks, telling some of the students about this criminal justice reform, and saying that when you're facing a mandatory minimum sentencing of 15 years, you know, as an 18, 19 year old, a lot of people will just take the plea because they don't even want the chance of going to jail for 15 years.
Yep, and the plea bargain typically would be a shorter
sentence, right? And we were telling this to a student, and they said, that happened to me.
Really?
I did that. He's like, I was in the car with a friend who was doing something he wasn't supposed to. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I think he said it was 17 at the time. And he said exactly that same thing, you know. And so now he's going to have a criminal record for the rest of his life, you know, and Senator Paul believes in second chances, and he thinks we really need, who's really being served by putting a 17-year-old, threatening a 17-year-old with 15 years in jail?
If it's coercing or encouraging him to cop to something that's not actually something he honestly did, then that. It certainly raises some questions.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Paul Dame, who is a representative from Essex Junction and the co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign in the state of Vermont. The numbers to call to speak with Paul are 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. What are some of the other issues that Dr. Paul feels are important to get attention paid to?
Yeah, I think, you know, especially considering kind of a Vermont audience, he's a unique Republican in that he, a lot of fiscal conservatives who are kind of your more, your typical Republican voters are, can look at his tax plan, can look at some of the budgetary measures that he's been working on in the Senate. And he's a real fiscal conservative, so I think a lot of your kind of hardcore Republicans can rally around that. And then at the same time, some of going back to that question earlier about, you know, where that overlap is with Bernie Sanders is, you know, Senator Paul recognizes that there's a lot of large corporations who are paying almost nothing in tax, sometimes literally nothing in tax, and the reason is because they can hire an army of lawyers and lobbyists who can go in. We've got a 70,000-page tax code. And you know, the more complex it is, usually the less fair it is, because you've got every single, you know, lobbyist in there working on this and that and the other thing. And the budget process that is going on in Washington makes it impossible. We just had a budget, $1 trillion budget passed, over 2,000 pages, and less than 48 hours to read it. So nobody even knows what they voted on.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what happens is you've got lobbyists and they're creating these special loopholes for certain companies and certain industries. And so his tax plan would eliminate all of that. Mm-hmm. Every corporation would pay a 14.5% flat tax.
Hmm.
You wouldn't have some corporations paying zero.
Now, flat tax on income?
On income, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yep. So you wouldn't have some large corporations paying 0%. And then you've got a mom and pop Vermont, general store or small business that those people are sometimes paying 35 to 40% of their income.
Hmm.
When you're all done, because you've got your base income tax, and then they're also paying both sides of the FICA tax.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's an area where that sort of equality.
Yep, so leveling the playing field across the business sector.
It's a little different. I think the interesting thing is Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders identify some of the same problems.
Mm-hmm.
They just have different solutions on how to address
different approaches and that's kind of where I'm working around here to that. How about some of the you mentioned the disparity in sentencing and minimum sentencing and the disparity of effect, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
of the minimum sentencing rules and Dr. Paul's interest in rectifying that imbalance. What are some of the other social justice issues that he carries a flag for?
I think one of the biggest things that we're seeing, especially when I've been on college campuses asking students why they support him, is his critique of the NSA,
mm-hmm.
the bulk data collection mm-hmm. that's been happening, the fact that we are collecting the phone records of Americans who we have absolutely no suspicion of any wrongdoing at
mm-hmm.
all. And Senator Paul has been a real champion for stopping that program, including a 13-and-a-half-hour filibuster on the Senate floor mm-hmm. that allowed the program to expire.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, again, something that maybe even moderates and some Democrats appreciate that sort of, I don't know if it really falls into social justice, but definitely under civil liberties.
Yeah,
I think he's a very strong... He's stronger on civil liberties than most of the other Republicans
mm-hmm.
talk about. I think one of the things that he said when he was here in Essex is Republicans, fight to the death to protect the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the Fourth Amendment,
mm-hmm.
the Fifth Amendment, the
mm-hmm.
First Amendment? We need to be, just as vigilant as protecting all of those rights as we are on the Second.
We're speaking with Paul Dame, who is a state rep from Essex Junction and also co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign here in Vermont, campaign for the Republican nomination for President of the United States. If you have a question, give us a call at 244-1777, or you can call us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Speaking of that Second Amendment, where does Dr. Paul come down on the issue of the well-regulated militia and the right to bear arms?
He's one of the strongest supporters of the Second Amendment. I don't know. To start with, he's been endorsed. He gets, I think, either an A or an A-minus rating from the NRA.
Mm.
He's also worked very closely with, Gun Owners of America. He's got a good record for folks who are concerned about infringements on their Second Amendment right, and here in Vermont, right, the Article 16.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's been a big champion for protecting both of those rights.
And how does he respond to critics who say that the recent history in the United States of just wanton gun violence, taking many, many innocent lives, warrants a different kind of response? How does he respond to that?
Well, I don't know if I can answer that question for him particularly, but what I think, I can safely say is that we're never more safe when we give up our rights.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies to the Second Amendment just as it applies to the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment, that criminals don't obey gun laws. Creating a new law is not going to stop any of those tragedies. And what it will do is it'll stop level-headed citizens who want to protect themselves from being able to respond and protect themselves in cases like that.
Well, of course, there is an argument that arming, as you put it, level-headed citizens simply puts more firearms out there. doesn't necessarily make people safer.
Well, I think we could also say that, if we look at the places where most the largest tragedies have happened are in a lot of these gun-free zones that no one's allowed to carry, which means the casualties are usually at their maximum because no one's there to protect themselves until 10 to 15 minutes later when the police mm-hmm. show up. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be my best guess.
That would be part of it. I don't know too many SWAT team members who would say, yeah, just, get yourself a gun license and you're good to go. It takes a little bit more than just owning a weapon to be able to use it in an effective way.
Yeah, and I think most, I think most of the people, at least that I know, that own a weapon, are doing it responsibly. They recognize that it's with every right comes a responsibility, and certainly part of that responsibility is knowing how to use it, how to care for it, how to lock up and mm-hmm. and maintaining it. All those things with all the gun owners that I know. Are just as much focused on the education piece of that.
And how about your candidate? Does he feel that way as well?
Feel what way?
Has he made a point of coupling responsibility with the right?
I don't know that I've got. I've heard a quote. That I can respond to in that.
Okay, well, we'll get back to you on that one then,
yeah,
for sure.
Yep.
We're talking with Paul Dame, who is state rep from Essex Junction and co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign here in Vermont, and we're looking for your calls. Give us a call at 244-1777, 877-291-8255, and Richard from Morrisville, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I don't know exactly how to present my question and my concern. Is traditionally, the Republican Party has been a law and order party, and a Democrat Party has been more liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what has happened in the tenor of the strong Democrat Party is, I believe, that they've rubberized the Constitution to stretch it in to cover social issues that are not presented in the Constitution.
Well, that's a really intriguing. That's an interesting perspective I had not heard before. Can you give me an example so I can get a clear idea of
Well, I think welfare is not covered in the national Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
It's no way that this was brought up in the past, the consensus of it was that the politicians are ready and willing to spend your money on welfare programs, but they don't want to spend their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have rubberized the Constitution to be able to stretch over these issues because they look good at home.
Hmm.
But that's just one illustration.
So what's your question then?
My question is, why hasn't the Republican Party stood ground on issues of that stretch the Constitution to the point of just being not a control at all?
Uh-huh. Okay. So if I understand you correctly, you feel that the government is kind of assuming more responsibility than the Constitution would.
More liberties, not responsibility,
okay.
Because mm-hmm. that would legitimize their actions.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your question. Let's let Representative Dame answer that. How would your candidate answer that?
I think one of the things I've heard Senator Paul say time and time again is there is certainly kind of this unholy alliance between the right and the left
mm-hmm.
When it comes to spending, and especially spending on things that are outside sort of the constitutionally prescribed areas of government. And so he talks about, the right, the folks on the right, a lot of the Republicans want as much military spending as they can get. Mm. And folks on the left want more domestic program spending. And what happens is whenever they talk about bipartisanship, it's both parties agree to spend more in their particular areas, right? And that's something Senator Paul has been absolutely against, that's not helping, because whenever we as we continue to go into debt, we don't have it's not. It doesn't help our military spending if we're borrowing money from China to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help domestic spending if we're constantly going into debt, because if, you know, as we look 10, 20, 30 years out, the amount of debt service that's a part of the overall federal budget will eventually crowd out those programs.
So we won't be spending our money on things of substance. We'll be spending it, sending it to the banks or yep. sending it to the, well, or to the American
whoever
people,
our
or whoever's
credit,
buying
yeah,
the
creditors
bonds.
Are, okay. Right. So I think that's an area where he's been very clear that we need to stop this, because it's both parties. It's not, I don't think it's just Democrats mm-hmm. that want to expand what the proper, you know, role of government is for on the federal level, because I think a lot of Republicans want more than just a national defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want a world police force, and that's something that Senator Paul has been absolutely against.
We are going to return to the subject of fiscal responsibility after a couple of words from sponsors. My name is Hester Fuller, and you are listening to Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm here every Monday from 9 until 11. And, of course, my esteemed colleague Mike Smith is here Tuesday through Friday in this very same chair. Today, my guest is Paul Dame, who's a state rep from Essex Junction and also the co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign in Vermont. Just filed a petition a week ago and ramping up for an election season. Paul, right before the break, we were talking a bit about fiscal responsibility, and I wanted to get back to that for a little bit. I know that one of Dr. Paul's strongest positions is in favor of a balanced budget amendment. And I wanted to ask you about that in the context of a current practice, which is to offset new spending at the federal level with cuts for that. Why is that not sufficient? Why do we need to go all the way to a balanced budget?
That's a great question. It's an important one, too. I think part of it is that, you know, Senator Paul doesn't believe that all of the money that we're spending right now is well spent.
Mm.
You know, one of the examples he used when he was here in Essex back in August was he talked about the federal government funded a study that cost $700,000 to determine whether or not Japanese quail are more sexually promiscuous when they're using cocaine. So
there's got to be a bigger picture that was a part of that we're not quite hearing all about here.
I'm interested to know. It takes quite a stretch of my imagination to figure out how that can be relevant to something that is we're demanding money out of the pockets of taxpayers mm-hmm. to pay for that.
Okay.
And so I think that's Senator Paul's position, is that there's a lot of wasteful military spending. Right. Another example that he used, I forget the figure, but I think it was somewhere around, you know, $700,000 to $800,000 spent to develop a nationally televised cricket league in Afghanistan. A lot of most folks in Afghanistan don't have a television.
Okay.
But that gets funneled under military spending. So
nation building.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so I think it's an example where a lot of these other Republicans who talk, we're not spending enough on our military. You know, you listen to people like, you know, Carly Fiorina or Marco Rubio, and they make it sound like our military is falling apart. Mm-hmm. Everyone's driving around in rusted old boats. But part of the problem is we're spending money under the guise of military that's not actually going to mm-hmm. to paying our veterans and all that mm-hmm. that stuff. So I think that's the reason that just swapping one spending for another isn't enough, because already we're spending more than we're taking in.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to change the fact that we're continuing to borrow money. I think, you know, Senator Paul has said $1 million a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't account for some of the automatic increases. You know, one of the helpful things from the sequester was that it actually didn't cut spending.
Mm-hmm.
It just reduced the rate of growth. So spending continues to increase automatically,
albeit at a slower rate.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so the sequester caps, my understanding is, with this last budget deal are now gone. So now we're continuing to, you know, sort of. Already baked into every budget is an automatic increase. So we're never going to get to a balance. Right now, our budget isn't balanced today. We're already doing automatic increases.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're swapping out dollar for dollar, we're never going to close that gap.
Well, if we have a legislature, a Congress rather, that is passing provisions in these massive budgets that are too enormous for anybody to actually get their head around before they have to cast a vote. Passing provisions like funding the quail study or funding some of the other things that some folks might judge were irresponsible expenses. How can we count on such a Congress to pass the right kind of cuts, as you know, if we want to put it that way, the ones where to cut those things as opposed to cutting sort of the big obvious targets?
Yeah. I think part of it is we need an administration that's going to set forth a starting point, right? Every budget, every budget year has this. We have this here in Vermont. Mm-hmm. You know, the governor puts out a budget.
And so does the president.
The legislature uses that as a starting point, you know, and so I think it's helpful to have somebody like Senator Paul in the Oval Office to put forward a budget that goes through and eliminates a lot of that stuff. I think one of the things that I found, maybe it's just because I'm a first-term legislator, is I really have no idea where we're spending our money. Mm. The example I always use is a particular program came forward and showed, all right, well, we're eliminating this $100,000 out of Vermont state budget because it goes to a program, and I don't want to give details, but basically that was only, it was under the Department of Aging and Independent Living, but that program was going to folks who are mostly upper middle income. Mm. So they eliminated it. So, which I thought was a good thing in a tight budget year. That's the kind of sacrifices we make, you know, cutting that instead of cutting a number of other things.
A program that serves someone with less income.
Exactly. I was sitting there as a freshman thinking, if this department head didn't bring that information forward, how would I ever find that out? Mm-hmm. And so I think that, maybe it's just because I'm a part-time legislator, that it's hard for the legislature to do that work. So having an administration like Senator Paul would have, is you go through, you have a starting point where legislators can then look at that and say, oh, I didn't know that was in there. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And it won't be as big and bulky as the big, I mean, they get the budget right in front of them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he would go through and handpick the things that he wants them to notice are being spent.
Yep.
We are speaking with Paul Dame, who is a state rep from Essex Junction and co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign here in the state of Vermont, and we're open to your calls. Give us a call here at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Tom from Barry, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was just calling in because with Rand Paul and, like, with Bernie, and it doesn't seem, you know, the odds of either one of them, if, you know, even if Bernie were to get elected, we'd probably have 4 years or 8 years of, you know, just stonewalling on both ends. I think the you know, when you have, like, the Republicans who actually came out and said that their main objective for Obama was to fight him and block mm-hmm. everything and anything he wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
and it just doesn't work there. The system is broken. I mean, you know, when Bush was in there and the Democrats had the houses and the Senate, that's all they did was block him at all things. I think the best thing we could do is give everybody an 8-year term limit, and then maybe some of this would stop, because once they get in, the first thing that they start to do is raise money to make sure they can stay.
Mm-hmm.
And for the, you know, and for the kind of money they're making, I guess I'd be doing the same thing. And I just think it's sad because nothing's ever going to get done, no matter who gets elected. And, you know, maybe like Bill Clinton wanted, give the line item veto or something, but it's just a stalemate, and everybody says that all the quail study is just, you know, so bad, but then you'll find out that it's some senator's got a business or a company that's doing the study in his state. He got the money for the state, so that's okay because it's helping us. That's just a never-ending circle, and
it seems tough. Tom, let me ask you a question. Do you remember a time when it wasn't like this? I mean, I agree that certainly the last 8 years have been a tough slog.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there has been, but of course, with the press now, I mean, it's just like all these shootings. We never, you know, I think half the trouble with all these shootings is the coverage and the mm-hmm. coverage these people are getting when they do it. I just think we hear about it more now, and of course, back in the day, I mean, you see a lot more backroom stuff got decided, but I just think that the reason why your voter turnout's so low is just people says, why bother? It's the same over and over again, and no matter who gets in there, they all have lofty things, and like with Obama, and they all just get, you know, blocked. And it's pretty sad.
And your thought is that term limits would relieve some of that cynicism on the part of voters because it looked like some of these guys would be.
Well, I mean, it's like when Strom Thurmond was there. I mean, mm-hmm. they literally had to wheel him in a wheelchair to vote. I mean, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. A man was there how many years? 50, 60 years?
A while.
That's just not the way it was designed. Yeah. And I guess I'll just get off and listen. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tom, for calling in. Appreciate the call. Representative Dame, what do you think about the notion of term limits, and what does your candidate think about term limits?
Yeah, so Senator Paul has been a staunch advocate for term limits. Mm-hmm. He thinks 2 terms in the Senate and 6 terms in the House. So either way, 12 years in one House, mm-hmm. that's plenty of time. I think it's good. Some folks have wanted to limit it lower than that. And as a first term legislator, I see the wisdom in having some experience.
And why is that?
Takes a while
to learn the job.
You know, when you're in there. So like last year, I went in and within 3 weeks of being sworn in, I had to vote on a budget adjustment. I had almost no idea really what that meant to the level of detail that my colleagues did. So I could talk to other folks who have been there for a few years and could say, all right, this is how this works. This is what this line item is. And so it's really helpful to get up to speed to have mm-hmm. other colleagues who aren't, I think it could be very dangerous.
If everybody was new, you mean?
If everyone was new. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's part of the reason, Senator Paul has advocated for 2 terms in the Senate, 6 terms in the House, because mm-hmm. 12 years, that's plenty. I think one of the concerns he has is that, I mean, and to go to the caller's other question or other point was that, everyone doesn't like these studies, but if your state has a huge quail population and that helps your state, people will make exceptions. And so part of it is we as voters need to take responsibility for the fact that we need to, if we want the country to move in that direction, we have to be willing to make the cuts that may hurt us. And I think, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you talk about long tenure, and Patrick Leahy has been a U.S. senator since my mother was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason everyone wants to vote for him is because he brings home the bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And until we as voters change our perspective on that, we're going to continue to have the system that we have. When we continue to say, well, if we can get something for my state, then spending is okay, we're going to continue. And I think that's one of it's the double-edged sort of a democracy, mm-hmm. is we have a political system that represents the values of voters.
I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here on exactly that question. Beyond simply the spending of things that maybe don't look like they serve a greater good, we also have the problem that comes up when there are things that would definitely serve the public good, but the basic market won't support them. And I'm thinking about healthcare as one example. The entire country and the industrial sector benefit from a healthy populace. And there's plenty of statistical evidence and other kinds of evidence that suggest that people who get regular checkups are going to wind up, on balance, healthier, especially if they can afford decent food. People who can eat the right kinds of things can stay healthier, and that benefits everybody. Mm-hmm. And yet we have this sort of hiccup in our thinking. Although it benefits everybody, somehow it's that individual person's responsibility. And some of the expenses that we see for human services and so forth would fall into that category. They actually do benefit the society as a whole, but they're not seen as necessarily by everyone as a social responsibility. They're seen as, well, that really should be up to individual people to take responsibility for their own health, for the diet of their children, for that sort of thing. Where does your candidate come down on the question of some of those programs that are seen sometimes lumped together as the social safety net or whatever you'd want to say, but that actually do produce a benefit to the society as a whole that wouldn't otherwise be picked up by the market?
Yeah, I think it would vary depending on the particular program you're talking about. I think there are a number of things, and this is a little bit more conjecture. I can't say officially mm-hmm. this is, Rand Paul's position, but I think there are some very basic things that do help public health. I think some of the things like, basic I'm trying to think, you know, population-wide outcomes are the kinds of things that, that may be appropriate. But when you start getting into whether or not an individual's particular health service should be paid for by everyone, that it gets to be a tricky, you know, place. Where do you draw that line, right? Because you can make the case that almost everything we do, we take responsibility for as individuals. If we all did those things better, and then the question is, who gets to decide
what's better?
You know, we have an interest. You know, we don't have. We have a very decentralized food distribution source or a system. I mean, if you can even call it a system, and most people, there are very few people that are starving on the scale that we see in other countries.
Well,
I
think it really depends on the region you're at and the population you're talking about. I think we can point to some pretty hard luck cases right here in the state of Vermont and certainly other regions of the country.
Yep,
but. For the sake of argument, you're using an example of the food system.
Right, but I'm saying you compare that to other countries. So, like, my wife's from Romania, and she grew up under Ceausescu's regime, where they had a centrally planned food distribution system. And what happens was there were shortages. And so more people were, malnourished, and there was much more hunger going on because— It's hard to develop a system that can dynamically respond when it's centrally controlled. And so I think that's kind of a general principle that I can say, you know, Rand Paul is supportive of, is that the private sector does a lot of those things better than a monolithic, centrally planned government. Now, there are places where we can go in and kind of and provide that safety net sort of to pick up the pieces, the folks that fall through. But I think, you know, he would probably look at Vermont's health insurance system and say we've gone too far in that direction. You know, we've shrunk the we used to have over 12 insurers in the state. Now we have two. Functionally, we really have one. I think Blue Cross Blue Shield has something like 90% of the business. And Vermonters are paying higher rates than almost every other state. We had the largest increase even after. So I thought when we had the Affordable Care Act, Vermont was probably, I thought we were going to see the smallest increase because we already had community rating, we already had guaranteed issue, and yet we still saw one of the largest increases of any state. So I think we've gotten more government involvement under good premise, you know, under a good premise, a noble premise, but the results just haven't been there.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, particularly on the healthcare. I'm speaking with Paul Dame, and he is a state rep from Essex Junction and also co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign here in the state of Vermont, which officially got underway, I guess, a week ago when you filed a petition down in Montpelier. And we'll be back with more. If you have questions for Paul, give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You're listening to Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm with you every Monday from 9 until noontime. And my guest today is Paul Dame, a state rep from Essex Junction and co-chair of Rand Paul's campaign for the Republican nomination for president. If you've got a question you'd like to pose to my guest, please give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Paul, I didn't want to let you go without at least touching on foreign policy, which is an issue that a lot of people are getting their hackles up about, particularly this early in this election. Can you tell me a bit about your candidate's positions on various foreign policy issues?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that really sets Rand Paul apart from his Republican colleagues, and even from Hillary Clinton too. A lot of folks want to call him an isolationist. Really, his position is more non-interventionist. Basically, what that means is there is not a direct U.S. interest or a national security threat we really shouldn't be getting involved. Mm. You know, and you compare that. I think the last debate was really helpful to highlight the difference that Rand Paul has with the rest of his party. And you hear things, you know, people talk about, you know, carpet bombing or, you know, make the sand glow in the Middle East. And that's just totally antithetical to Rand Paul's position. I think you even hear folks demanding a no-fly zone over Syria. Mm-hmm. Syria is their own independent sovereign country. And really, what business do we have telling them who can fly over their space? And the second thing is, if we do that, we're almost guaranteed to start World War III with Russia. Mm-hmm. Russia is already flying over their airspace at the invitation of Iraq and mm-hmm. of Syria. And then the third piece of that is why? Mm-hmm. That's a question I can't get anyone. What good does that do to for the U.S. other than, hey, it makes us look like we're really tough guys?
But, well, getting back to this idea of no threat, no intervention, does your candidate seriously feel that there is no threat to the United States when we see attacks like what happened in San Bernardino, even not directly, perhaps, you know, liaising with ISIS, but crediting ISIS with the inspiration for things like that? Isn't that a threat?
It absolutely is. And I think it goes back to the question of, just because you've identified a problem doesn't mean every solution is going to be equally valuable. I think, you know, Senator Paul's position is part of the reason we have ISIS is because we went into Iraq in 2003. And we shouldn't have done that. That was a mistake. Mm-hmm. And until Republicans are willing to admit that was a mistake, we're going to continue to have foreign policies based on that same mistake. Mm-hmm. Because what happened is we went in and we toppled Saddam Hussein, who was not a good guy by any means. We can all agree that. But we left this huge vacuum, which allowed very radical elements to rise up, to gain power in that vacuum and create ISIS we have today. And the other issue is we flew into Iraq. You know, we got involved there. And we left a lot of our military equipment there. Mm. And right now, you know, ISIS has been riding around in millions of dollars of American Humvees. I saw a report that some business owner sold his truck back to a dealership, and they didn't take the logo off the name, and the dealership sold it back, you know, and ended up in an ISIS video. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there's a lot of places where we are creating the conditions that allow ISIS to gain support in those local areas, and further bombing and destruction are not going to help. It's not going to help U.S. interests. It's going to help ISIS in terms of recruiting, because now you've got somebody whose mother, sister, brother was bombed, totally innocent, had nothing to do with it. They're easier to recruit now, and so part of the reason we have ISIS is because the failed foreign policy that we've had, that is the same. We've got the same foreign policy advisor for Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz. And I think we've got to move away from that intervention. And there are a lot of bad people out mm-hmm. there, you know, that are dictators. But we need to really think through what we do before we get involved, and part of the problem, you know, some folks want to blame Bush for going in 2003, and some folks want to blame Obama for pulling out too soon. But even if we had, if Obama hadn't pulled out too soon, what's the end game there? I mean, what is the resolution?
It gets back to Colin Powell. I mean, you know, you better have an exit strategy.
Exactly.
You know what? You are tuned to WDEV and the Open Mic program here. And my name is Hester Fuller. My guest today is Paul Dame, and we're looking for your comments and questions, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Fred from Newbury, do you have a question for Paul today?
Yeah, I have a question and a comment. Let's see, during the Vietnam War, they said the draft wasn't fair. My contention today, the volunteer army is not fair. That's my first question. And then
I didn't quite hear you. You said it wasn't not fair?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
The draft wasn't fair. That's what they said. The draft wasn't
right.
fair during the Vietnam
yeah,
War.
Yeah, I just couldn't hear you.
Today, my contention is the volunteer army isn't fair.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's the first one. And then the second one is he talks about World War III. It sounds like he's never studied World War I, because we'll never, ever have a World War III. It just won't happen, because it just can't happen. And the reason why it can't happen is because World War II started in Great Britain. It went from Great Britain all the way to Stalingrad. That's 3,000 miles of a gigantic continental war, let alone a gigantic Pacific war and a gigantic Atlantic war. So World War III, forget it. It's not going to happen. I don't know where he gets that.
If I can respond to that, I think one of the biggest problems we have is with Turkey as a NATO member. The U.S. has gone into a lot of these former Soviet satellites and basically promised to do their defense for them. And that's part of the reason we have NATO. And now with Turkey's involvement in that, we're in a very strange position, which George Washington warned us about, entangling alliances, that to me, you study World War I and World War II, the problem was all of these countries had all these different alliances. They were all connected in all these treaties. And that's so when one domino fell, they all fell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, the concern is, maybe let's be optimistic. I hope it wouldn't start World War III. But when you have the U.S. shooting down Russian planes, even if it's not World War III, not very good things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't think anything that's going to happen is going to serve the U.S. interests or make Americans any safer.
I want to quickly ask you to respond to Fred's first point, which is the notion that the volunteer army is not fair, any more fair than the draft was fair. We didn't actually get him to elaborate on that. But do you have any thoughts about, or does your candidate have thoughts about where we should draw our fighting forces from, if not a volunteer corps?
Yeah, I don't know that I've heard Senator Paul speak on that issue particularly, but I think overall one of the principles that I know he does support is voluntary, everything being voluntary. Whether that's,
Well, oftentimes the volunteers, quote unquote, end up being the folks who can't get opportunities in other places.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Then if they don't have that opportunity, then what other opportunity do they have?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that would be, I think it's, we go back to, the idea of things being, relative or objective. I think the volunteer force is probably more fair than a draft.
My guest is Paul Dame, state rep from Essex Junction and the co-chair for Rand Paul's campaign in Vermont. You're listening to Open Mic. We're going to stop and take a bit of a break for news at the top of the hour. You're tuned to WDEV AM 550 in Waterbury, also broadcasting at 96.1 FM in Warren, Vermont, 96.5 FM in Barrie, Vermont, and 101.9 FM up in Island Pond, the news frequencies of WDEV. We also stream worldwide at WDEVradio.com. My name is Hester Fuller, and I'll be back with you on the other side of the hour. Stay tuned. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name, and I'm with you from now until 11 o'clock with my esteemed colleague Tom McLeod, who's also back from our holiday breaks. Did you have a good Christmas, Tom?
I had a great Christmas.
That's
thank you.
Good. I'm very glad to hear that.
And you said yours was good?
It was great. I did absolutely nothing. It was like perfect.
That is kind of nice.
I didn't do absolutely nothing. I had to feed all my animals, so it was a lot of fun.
But you traveled for Thanksgiving, so it's nice to have time.
It's great to have a day. I love waking up in my own house Christmas morning, and I love making myself a little breakfast and just hanging out and then going out to the barn, and just it was my kind of Christmas. It really was. And I can't even say I was unhappy about the weather either. So.
No, that was kind of – a friend of mine was over at Newfound Lake in New Hampshire, and the sun went down.
Wow.
It looked like he was in heaven or something, just on the lake shore, and they got a Newfoundland that was bumping around. He thought that was great.
That's
so
great. It has looked like heaven the last few mornings and evenings between the warm weather and the funny clouds in the sky, the way they are and the way they've been catching the light, and that ginormous moon that we had over Christmas.
Christmas morning, it was supposed to be called the cold moon, but it was a warm day.
It was a warm day.
And I think it was full at about 6:12 Christmas morning.
Oh, my gosh. And it was just ginormous.
Yes, it was.
It was really huge and really, really beautiful. It reminds me once again of why I wouldn't live anywhere else on the face of the planet. You are tuned to Open Mic, and we have an open mic for you for the next hour. Give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. How did you spend your holidays? Well, I guess we're still in the midst of them. We got New Year's coming up
pretty, right around the corner.
Quickly. Yep, that's true. One thing I've noticed is the great number of people who celebrated the Christmas holiday by taking a swim. There was a bunch in Caspian Lake up in Greensboro, and now I see Number 10 Pond had some swimmers in there. If we have some folks out there who took a dip for the holiday, I'd sure like to hear from you. And what were you thinking? We'd really like to know.
Pretty much. I mean, I imagine it's warmer than it would normally be,
warmer than. It's true. I don't think we're going to be dipping anytime soon either, according to what Roger was saying.
Yeah, winter might be here. Yeah,
it's going to be a little bit crazy. So we'd love to hear from you. How was your weekend? Give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. We'll put you in touch with Open Mic here at WDEV. You know, during that newscast when Sweet Georgia Brown came up and the sad news that Meadowlark Lemon had left us, and coming straight on the heels this morning, I learned that Hendu had left us. Dave Henderson, the outfielder who made magic for all of us in 1986, although the magic was destined to be short-lived when the ball rolled down through Billy Buckner's legs.
Yep.
Hendu had made Boston history then, and I think his loss is mourned by sports fans anywhere, everywhere. Boston sports fans, certainly all across Red Sox Nation, are sorry to see that happen. We lost a lot of good people in 2015.
It's funny how it always happens, though. There seems to be two or three around both the holidays, the New Year, the Christmas. I don't know if it's people all getting together. They changed. It just seems that you wake up Christmas morning and people are gone.
Three people that you will sorely miss.
Yeah.
If there's someone who left the public stage that you will miss in the past year, give us a call. It's just a chance to acknowledge and recognize them. Someone in your own life that you'll miss, call us and tell us about them. Help celebrate them. Give us a call, 244-1777 or 877-291-8255 for Open Mic here at WDEV. So the white Christmas that we all didn't have last Friday, is it on its way? Is that what you hear?
Well, it appears that, it might be. I'm just checking Roger's forecast, skimming over it. Till Friday, looks like stuff that, if it's going to do anything, will snow.
Mm.
But it is kind of too bad. A lot of people enjoyed the warm because it's a novelty for us. People swimming, people playing golf on Christmas. But for people who like a white Christmas, which is almost everybody, that came today and last night.
Just missed it. But it's not too late for the ski season. I think it's very, very timely to have it come. It would have been nice to have it last week. It would have been nice, let's put it this way, for folks in Boston who turned on their TVs to see pictures of a snow-covered hillside in Vermont as they were trying to decide what to do with time off between Christmas and New Year's. But maybe we'll be able to bring them that good.
Yeah, for New Year's?
Yeah.
There'll be some stuff coming tonight. So.
Sure, of course, Roger, many of the places with this cold weather can make snow. Even the cross-country place up in Craftsbury, where I live, across the outdoor center, has been making snow. They had a race last weekend. What day is it? Oh, it's Monday, so it's two weekends
Monday,
ago.
Monday, the 28th?
The 28th coming up.
So, I guess the big thing, it's got to be cool, but the other thing that really hurts the snow, according to Roger Hill, is fog.
Really?
Does a number on it. I'm not sure why. I'm sure he can tell us sometime. He'll be back on with us down the road. So.
Yeah, we'll have to get him back on the air to talk a bit about how that happens. I can see fog being corrosive to snow cover.
Maybe because it's warmer?
Well, yeah, it puts water on it and then that freezes and makes it crusty.
Yeah.
Or something. Who knows? Well, I'm sure Roger knows, and at some point we'll get him back here to explain those mysteries to us. Right now, though, we want to hear from you guys. Give us a call at 244-1777 or call us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Got any ideas for new shows for us, new guests that you'd like to hear in this slot? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. I'm interested. There's a lady in Waterbury who paid a visit or was in Greece and arrived at one of the refugee camps there and has some firsthand experience of the folks that have been fleeing the Syrian conflict. I'd really, really like to invite her in and have her
be very interesting.
Talk to us and describe and talk to us about the need that she saw there and efforts that she may be aware of to rectify that. So that's a couple phone calls I think I'll be making this week.
Good.
If you have some guests that you'd like to have us interview, give us a call. Tell us who you'd like to hear from. 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. That's the toll-free number right here at WDEV.
We talked to a lot of people to get them on today, but pretty much everybody had a holiday commitment.
Yeah, everybody's on vacation or committed.
Committed
or should be.
But the fellow who came in today, I hadn't heard a lot about Rand Paul just a little bit, so I heard some new things. That was interesting.
Well, it's always interesting to hear people just kind of lay it out when they're sort of free to lay it out without too much harassment at first. It gives us a chance to bone up and go figure out what kind of things we want to know. And our listeners are always courteous and thoughtful, and we had some interesting comments from folks. They always make me think when people call in here. It always gives me something to think about, a perspective on an issue that I wouldn't have occurred to me. So I appreciate it when you all call in, and I sure appreciate it now. 244-1777 or call us toll free at 877-291-8255. How long till pitchers and catchers come head out? Can't be too much longer.
Until the spring training.
Like 6 weeks maybe?
I think that's in
mid-February?
March anyway, but February I think they start. I know they're still just working out deals and stuff.
Yeah. But it can't be more than 6 weeks or so till pitchers and catchers report.
It starts earlier than ever. It starts like early April. So
I can't wait. To me, that's really the first sign of spring. That would be
The one thing that helps is when it's the Daytona 500, you notice the days start getting a little longer, even though that's officially going on, but it's in small increments.
Yeah, no, I think I'm very happy that we've turned the corner on that. And speaking of Daytona, I guess they're going to be debuting a brand new facility. Is that what I hear?
It looks amazing.
Tell me what you've seen.
Well,
some pictures?
They're kind of trying to keep it a surprise in some ways.
A giant racetrack a surprise.
Yeah, it just seems like that's how they're, like the promos we've been running on WDEV. Wait till you see it. It's going to be great, but it doesn't really describe. I think they're trying to make it a very interactive experience.
Wow.
Instead of just what you're used to.
Yes, seats right in the middle of the track, maybe. No, probably not.
Well, I know in some other racetracks, they've developed these catwalks where you can like walk over.
Really?
So you can just kind of look down, and there's Dale Jr.'s car being serviced. You can almost feel that you can touch them. So that's what others have done. I assume it's something.
Wow. Well, that'll be exciting.
We'll have
to
look that up.
Well, we have the A1 correspondent who will be able to fill us in great detail about what the improvements have been.
Be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing his accounts of what's going on down there.
Yep.
That's coming up not too long from now either. Gosh, it's amazing.
Yeah, the end of February, I believe. Yep. Used to be earlier, but...
Well, it'll be... Yeah, it is the end this year. It used to be Valentine's Day,
They pushed it back, but of course NASCAR starts in February, ends in November, so that's a pretty good long season.
They all go forever, don't they?
A lot of them do.
Yep. Give us a call. We are Open Mic. It's Hester Fuller, and I'm here with Tom McLeod this morning. Give us a call at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. We'd love to know what's on your mind on this Monday morning, the last Monday morning in 2015. What are you going to miss about this year? What are you looking forward to in 2016? Let us know. We'll be back in just a minute after these messages. You're tuned to Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back. You are tuned to WDEV in Waterbury and the Open Mic program. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm here until 11 o'clock, and with me, my esteemed colleague and associate producer, Tom McLeod, at the controls, ready to hear from you guys. And I guess we have a caller from Waterbury on the line. What's on your mind, sir?
Hello.
Hi. Are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi. What's your name again?
Roy Lloyd.
Roy. Nice to talk to you, Roy. What are you thinking about?
Well, first of all, I want to say how much I appreciate the show that you do on Mondays. I think you're terrific. Oh,
well, thank you. You're very nice to say so.
You got me thinking about someone who died this last year who was important to me and really a name that people probably don't know at all, but who had a rather marvelous effect on this world. The name was Everett Parker. Everett died a few months ago, and I was fortunate to call him a friend and a colleague for quite a few years. He was considerably older than me. He died at 102.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
A good long run.
Yeah, and he was as bright as can be. Mm. Everett was head of communications for the United Church of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Everett was so disturbed by the fact that in broadcasting, especially in the South, there weren't any people of color, no mm-hmm. blacks, no people of color at all mm-hmm. on the air, no news about them.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he challenged the license of a station in Montgomery, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and was able, after a long effort, to get it overturned. And that really, it changed the whole landscape of broadcast television and really radio.
Wow, you know, no, I don't know about that.
People.
I didn't know that story. When did this happen? When was that challenge mounted?
It was in the 50s.
Uh-huh.
And it took him several years. There was a Supreme Court problem. I mean, but he didn't give up because he said the airwaves belong to the people,
mm-hmm.
all of the people, and that for people who are black, people of color, to be excluded from jobs, from being on the air, and to have their stories told
mm-hmm.
was really an injustice.
And that's
Everett was just a marvelous person, and he stuck with it all the way.
Wow. And now, was Everett a friend of yours?
Yes.
Tell us a bit about what he was like, apart from his public role, which I totally agree is that was a major contribution to make. What was he like in his off time?
He was funny and mm-hmm. witty, and had a really kind of wicked sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
Liked to play practical jokes.
Oh, tell us a story. Can you give us an example?
Let me see. I can't give you an example right at the moment.
Okay. Well, practical jokes can be that way.
When he was 90, was still teaching at Fordham University.
Really?
Yeah. And one of his best friends was the head of Westinghouse Broadcasting, long gone,
uh-huh.
and Donald McGannon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was he and Donald McGannon who decided that this would be the watchword, you do well by doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Everett lived his life, and he tried to encourage all the rest of us to do the same.
So he taught, now he was, you said, the communications director for the United Church of Christ. Is that what he taught when he was at Fordham?
He taught communications, mm-hmm. yes, and he taught really quite a bit about inclusiveness, language, and legal matters, dealing with how to open the airwaves to everyone.
Wow. Yep. A seriously large contribution.
Yes. And you just made me think of him, and I really appreciated that because I really liked Everett so much
yeah.
and liked coming by his home and at the end of the day, and he and I would talk about stuff, and there would be a little pre-dinner something
uh-huh.
as we talked.
Sure.
Which certainly sparked the conversation.
Well, thank you for calling in with that memory, Roy. We really appreciate it. We would love to hear some more from our listeners out there, the folks they remember, folks they lost, and feel we all suffered a loss when they left us in 2015. Give us a call at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255 if there's someone you would like to remember in that way. Tom just gave me a little message, and I thought it was one thing, and it turned out to be something else.
I was just mentioning the breaks. We do need two more.
Yes, so. No, I do understand
that.
Yep,
no problem.
No, that's good. We're waiting to hear from our listeners this morning. This is Open Mic on WDEV, and Hester Fuller is my name. I'm here with Tom McLeod every Monday from 9 until 11. And today we're taking a bit of a holiday breather. It's like, you know, after the big meal when the tryptophan stupor comes over the crowd and we all stumble off into the living room and fall on the couch and just take a breather. We're taking a bit of a breather this hour, and we're reflecting a bit on things that we've seen and done in the last year, and people that we loved and perhaps lost over the past year. And we'd like to hear from you at 244-1777, 877-291-8255. What's on your mind as 2015 winds to a close? Is this a year you'll miss or a year that you will be glad to see the backside of? Give us a call and let us know what you think.
Sounds like. Also, we were talking earlier about the full moon.
Oh, yeah.
That happened on Christmas morning. Now, I heard from somebody, I think Cor mentioned it, that coming up after the first of the year, there's going to be some type of comet going by.
Really?
Yeah, which would be, you don't see those all the time. So that'd be something, you know, the New Year's comet must have some type of historic.
Sure.
Maybe someone knows about that and they could call us up.
Yeah, they could give us a call. There was a thing in Science News last week. You know that, do you ever, the only other place I've ever seen it besides my mailbox is the dentist's office. It's this little slim, like 8-page magazine that I subscribe to, having fallen in love with it at the dentist's office. And it's like lots of little science-y type stories. And I was looking at the new issue that just came in last week, and it had a very short little squib about this long, slender comet. It's like 3,600 feet long and not very wide. I mean, it looks like a needle tumbling through space. And it's either went by last week or it's due by this week. Not going to come close enough to be really interesting, but, you know, close enough that we can get a gawk at it if we've got the right kind of opticals.
When that Hale-Bopp went by, what, 20 years ago or so, 15 years ago, that was fun to see.
Yeah.
Night after night it was up there.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the one that crashed into Jupiter and left a little...
I don't think so. This is the one that...
Pepper spots.
No, they had... that was different. This is the one some people, they had that... Those folks that... The religious folks that thought they were going to the spaceship.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So it had a bad rap, but it was beautiful. It was up... Yeah. I would say a month it was up in the sky.
Those things amaze me.
Usually they go right by.
Yeah, that's... Yep. Well, it must have been coming in at the right angle.
Yeah.
Yeah, the things that are there, that just go out and look, it's just amazing. It's actually one of my favorite things to do in the winter is get my warm suit on, like a snow machine suit or something like that, and bundle up and get something warm to drink and go and lie out on my hill and just look up. And it's just astonishing. And if you're warm, you can actually take the time to just look. And it's amazing what you can see out there. Winter is not without its pleasures, even if, like me, your favorite winter sport is reading. There's an awful lot of, there's a lot of cool stuff.
That's a sport, huh? Reading?
Well, for me, I read fast.
A lot of training for that?
I read wicked fast.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, that's what that is. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255. What will you miss? Who will you miss as 2015 exits and 2016 is rolling in? What's coming up for you in the new year? What kind of things can we look forward to in the new year? What are some of the good things that we can possibly expect to see come around the corner for us all starting at the end of this week? My goodness, it comes up quickly, doesn't it?
I know. It's amazing.
Wow, it's incredible. Well, I know we do have to pay the bills around here. And maybe
here's a phone call. So
Why don't we wait? Yeah, okay, let's check and see. We have a listener calling in with thoughts about the exiting old year or the incoming new year. We'll see what's on their minds in just a moment. Meanwhile, if you have a call or a question or a thought, give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. This is Open Mic on WDEV, and that's what it's all about, being an open mic and hearing what you have to say. Fred from Moncton Ridge, you're on the air. Oh, hey, Fred, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, you just hit something. You said, who will you not miss this year? I hope not to see Donald Trump name.
Oh, gosh. Lost my bingo. I just lost my Trump bingo bet. I was going to see if I could get through a whole show without mentioning him. Oi, oi.
I just, it's upset my, if I was a serious guy like I used to be about politics and whatever, it would upset the hell out of me that he was running.
Yeah.
But I don't pay any attention to it anymore because we can't make much of a difference to it. I vote my one vote.
Well, one thing we can do is choke off the oxygen by not discussing him. You know, just saying. You know.
No, I he's such a phenomenon. I just can't get over him, and I just can't wait for the Democrats to trounce the you know what.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
Donald and the boy.
Well, you know what I don't. There's a news story I haven't seen. I want to know what you think about this. There's a news story I haven't seen that I think we ought to see. We hear a lot about these polls that put him so high up. We don't see a lot of polls that indicate just, you know, maybe he has 40% of some group of people, the, you know, likely voters of the Republican Party. But my guess is that that group itself is really pretty tiny, and he poses less of a challenge, less of a big looming threat to the country as a whole. If we you know, 40, if there's only, you know, 15% of folks swearing to be registered Republicans, and he's got 40% of 15, what is that, 7% of the electorate overall? Just seems to me that...
Yeah, Donald, I don't think he doesn't have the steam to make it. He certainly got the money, but he doesn't have the steam to make it. I don't think the party, the Republican Party as a whole, is going to allow it.
I'm banking on the members of the Republican Party having been brought up by people like my Graham, who were manners freaks and who really thought you ought to treat people with courtesy.
You know, I call this group that's after Donald right now, supporting him, low white. Basically, if you look in his crowd, that's what you see.
Well, you know, that kind of does it. That does a disservice.
You don't see a bunch of blacks. You don't see a bunch of Mexicans. You don't see anybody but low white.
Well, I'll tell you that you better be careful there, because I think you're doing a disservice to white folks that haven't necessarily been to college when you say that, because I know plenty.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, well, there you go. And you're not a big fan of him.
I wouldn't follow Donald Trump, but I can tell you, I can see that group in his crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You've got blinders on, Dexter. If you don't believe that.
I like Dexter. That's fine. That's good.
Okay. If you've got blinders on, if you don't believe
I hear what you're saying.
Crowd, honest.
I hear what you're saying. I guess I'm just a little reluctant to paint any large group with the same brush, and I certainly know.
Oh yeah, see, I'm not at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's a few college grads in there, but the majority of the people that are running with Donald are low white.
Well, I think there may be something to that. I would also like to say that there's a lot of folks who might fall into that category who are not big Trump fans and who have wonderful manners and wouldn't dream of speaking to people the way he does.
It's not a bad description.
No, it's
a description. I didn't say it was bad.
I hear you.
I said it was low white.
Oh, I hear you.
I could have said it was high white.
You
like
could have.
Hillary Clinton's crowd.
Yeah, well, you could.
I could have, but I didn't.
You didn't, and I appreciate it. So,
okay, have a good New Year's Eve.
You too, Fred, and we'll talk to you next time around. Do you have thoughts about the candidates? Do you have thoughts about the departing new year, the departing old year, or the incoming new year? Give us a call here at WDEV. Open mic program today is really an open mic, and we'd like to hear from you. What are you going to miss about 2015? What are you going to be glad to see the backside of when 2015 rolls out the door at the end of this week? 244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Tom, you got any resolutions? Oops, sorry, caught you off guard there.
I really haven't thought about it. I tried on a daily basis or a weekly basis to just do something or learn something.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's part of why I like this job, because I always learn new things and I have opinions expressed to me that never would have occurred to me, and I always learn something from them.
Yeah, so I'll think of. I just hasn't felt with the holidays being kind of giving you these 3 and 4 day weekends.
Yeah.
It's got me all messed up as far as my internal clock here. So maybe around New Year's I'll go, well, I am going to wear less blue sweaters.
Oh, that would be a shame.
Important like
how will
that.
I recognize you with my glasses off?
Maybe I'll get a brown one.
Okay, well, thanks for the warning.
Yeah, okay.
So yep. And keep my eyes out. How about you out there? When you think about the coming New Year, do you have any resolutions that you're going to try to stick to? 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And we'll be looking for your phone calls, especially when we come right back from break. This is Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm with you until 11 o'clock when Bill Sayers will join us for Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute, or a production of the Ethan Allen Institute right here on WDEV. But right now, Open Mic is your open mic. We want to hear from you, hear what you're thinking as the year winds to a close this week. Rama from Williamstown, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind today? Oop, not hearing you. Not hearing you. Tom's flipping some buttons in there. We'll get it figured out, I'm sure. Let's see. Well, I'm not sure we can pull this one off. Might need to have you call us back again, and we'd be very glad to hear from you if you do. See what's happening with the hookup. Okay. Do you want me to ask him to call him back again? Okay. Rama, can you give us a call back again? There's something that's not quite right. Okay. So that occasionally happens. This is live radio, you know. What are you going to do? Give us a jingle at 244-1777. We look forward to hearing back from Rama in just a couple minutes. You can try to call in again, and we'll pop him on the air. He's a regular. If you're a regular, love to hear from you again as we wind down toward the end of the year. 877-291-8255 is our phone number. Open Mic is here every Monday through Friday morning between 9 and 11. And I'm here on Mondays, and my colleague Mike Smith is here on the other days. He'll be here tomorrow, and he'll be here right straight through until Friday. This is our public affairs show, and for all of us here at WDEV, the community voice is very important, and we want to hear what's on your mind here in the last year of 2015. I think we got Rama back again. Do we have you here?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. That's great.
You know, I had a really good year. Looking forward to another really good year.
Well, good.
But despite all of that, is this whole Trump thing, you wouldn't ignore cancer, right?
Right.
Right. Now, maybe you can ignore a zit because you can just wash your face or whatever, and after a while, it actually does go away.
Right. I take your point.
Yeah. So, you know, it would be without really beating the analogy to death, there's Trump isn't going away on his own.
Well, and no, that's probably true.
And even though he may be pulling in 30-40% of a small subset, is that still a substantial number? I mean, we're talking in the millions of people. And, you know, it's to ignore something like Trump, a political movement like Trump has going, is at our own peril.
No, I take your point, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but what I am going to suggest, and I'd love to know what your thought is about this, I think he gets an awful lot of oxygen relative to his, you know, the size of his constituency. I think the media pays an enormous amount of attention to him because they know that they can sell ads and programs where they bill that he's going to be on, because no one knows what outrageous thing he's going to say next. So I'm taking with a grain of salt the idea that he represents a really substantial point of view among average everyday Americans, most of whom seem to me much nicer people than he does. What do you think?
I don't think you're necessarily correct.
Okay.
Across the board. I think people tend to be, when you start making people afraid,
mm-hmm.
they tend to have very unsavory reactions out of fear.
I would agree with you there.
And okay. That's what Trump certainly is, I would claim many others are playing very much on physical fear.
Mm-hmm.
And emotional fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's, I wouldn't just brush it off. The history is full of people that came to power and did awful things, and they came to power by use of fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And who was it that said that, you know, the way evil men triumph is that good men do nothing?
Right. So I will agree that a majority of people are really good people. I tend to think that probably 95% or more of the people in this country are really just basically good, honest, hardworking people that mm-hmm. want to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but good, honest, hardworking people can and have been misled throughout time. So I think it's important. Listen, yeah, we could focus on the kind of shock jock things that Trump
sure,
says,
yeah.
And that's what cable TV does, and that's wrong. Or we can talk about the policies he's really espousing, and that's what cable TV doesn't do.
Well, I think you got a point there. That's true. So there would be a responsible way to deal with the phenomenon that is Mr.
Well,
Trump.
I think to deal with it on a number of levels. First of all, is somebody has to be able to get out there and tell people, look, don't be afraid. You know, mm-hmm. moving ahead with courage is going to get us a hell of a lot further than getting and trying to move ahead with fear.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, we don't have to go after people because of their religion.
Mm-hmm.
We can go after people because of what they do. I mean, it's a simple reality is if we went after religions based on what some groups of them do, we
mm-hmm.
would have outlawed the Catholic Church
mm-hmm.
due to massive child rape and molestation.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got a point there.
But we didn't.
But we didn't.
We looked and said, not all Catholics, not all priests do that.
Right.
So, you know, there are just an abundance of articles. So, you know, listen, as we move ahead, I have a positive outlook on the future. But in order for us to have a positive outlook on the future, we have to do positive things, and one of those is being aware of our surroundings.
I think you raised some excellent points, and I very much appreciate that. And I hadn't really thought about Trump from that point of view. That's exactly what I mean, Tom. Just, you know, this kind of thing. People say things, make me think twice, and I'm always the better for it. And I appreciate your call, Rama. Do you have resolutions for yourself?
No. I gave up on resolutions a long time ago. Now, listen, I'm going to just keep moving ahead and trying to make myself a better person. I try to make myself useful to the community around me. Mm-hmm. I try to make myself a better husband and a better housemate to people around me. Mm-hmm. And, I try to do some things for myself. So it's not resolutions. I'll just keep plugging away.
Well, it sounds like a plan to me, and I think it's a good plan and advice that a lot of us could benefit by heeding. And thank you very much, and I wish you a very happy new year. What are your thoughts as we wind down 2015? How are you going to move ahead into 2016? Give us a call. Let us know. 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Love to hear your thoughts on the year that's leaving, the year that's departing, or the year that's coming up. Who are you going to miss? Who have we lost that you're going to miss? And who are you just as happy to see the backside of as the year winds to a close? What are your anticipations for the coming year? How do you think the country's going to do? What do you think is going to happen in the election? Or what do you think is going to happen in the parts of our country that are more important or more immediately relevant to your own life? We'd really like to hear your thoughts. I could ask you how the Red Sox are going to do, but I don't want to jinx anything. So maybe we'll just leave that one lie.
It's probably a good idea.
Yeah, I know.
It's like that old curse of a Sports Illustrated, whoever they said, here's going to win the World Series on the cover.
Yep, boom.
Comes in last, usually.
That's right.
So there's a lesson.
Don't want to jinx it. Nope. Really don't. Not this early. Not before catchers and pitchers have even reported.
Yeah.
I would have the entire New England area to answer to.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be good?
That's too heavy a burden
for me. I think
you'd
like it too much here to be driven out of town on the rails. So.
That's for sure. Absolutely for sure. You are tuned to Open Mic here at WDEV, and it is an open mic this hour. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts as the year winds down. 244-1777. 877-291-8255. Had a wonderful call from a frequent caller here on this program, Rama from Williamstown, who's exiting the year with just sounded optimistic to me, and just a determination to make his own life a better life, to lead a better life, and to be the best version of himself that he can be. That seems like sound advice for just about anybody. What are your thoughts as we pull into the home stretch of 2015? Love to hear from you. 244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. We're on the air here with Open Mic until the top of the hour when Bill Sayers will be along. He's got Common Sense Radio coming your way at 11 o'clock, as he does every Monday through Friday. We have another caller from Randolph. Hi, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Hester. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Talking about politics, my family and I, we didn't talk really at all about politics over Christmas.
Yeah, okay.
We were gathered Christmas Eve, we were gathered Christmas, and it's funny, I have relatives here, or had relatives here from New Jersey, and they are in that guy's corner, so we just don't talk about it.
Well, you know, sometimes family peace has to trump everything. Oop, did I say that word?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, too. My husband worked for him when he opened his casino in Atlantic City.
Really?
Many, many, many years ago. He was a really good employer. He treated his employees really well.
That's good to know.
He didn't have a lot of choice. They were union, but he went beyond that, and he did things for families and that sort of thing. So as an employer, I have to say, you know, give him kudos.
Well, that's actually encouraging.
Yeah, you know, so unfortunately, I think his heart, you know, he does have some good things in that heart of his, but as a president, I just don't see it.
Yep.
And I pray for our country. We need it, but I'm hopeful there are great Americans, loving, kind, wonderful people, and I hope people will step up and be an American and vote.
Yes, that's the big thing. Everybody needs to get out and at least make their voice heard. Really appreciate the call. Hope that the stateies aren't following you down there on the highway, because we know that cell phone use, handheld devices are frowned upon. But we really appreciate your call, and thank you very much. We'd love to hear from our other listeners as well as we move toward the top of the hour here at WDEV. It's Open Mic on Open Mic. Our phone number is 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name, here for another 7 minutes or so of Open Mic, where it really is an open mic today. We're taking your calls at 244-1777, talking about what you want to talk about. 877-291-8255 is our toll-free number. I know there's someone on the line there, but I'm not sure who it is. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. What's your name?
Ron.
Ron. Hi, Ron. What's on your mind?
Well, I think we finally caught up with the end of the year for sure, but I think we're I think Mr. Trump is a benefit to people that have just gone through a lot of years using arbitrary democracy, and we have motives as well as opinions. And when a group of people just vote their opinion because they have a motive, and we don't realize that motive, we come to a point where we're going to run out of Ken Squire's money someday, and we won't know what to do. So,
well, what do you think we should be doing instead?
Well, we should, examine our motives. We can't help somebody if we just try to arbitrarily demand more and more for our special union, whether it's a state employees or a local union,
or a business even.
True. Mm-hmm. The thing that should be of interest is whether or not the president talks about our values. Well, the values of the scriptures say check the cost. And there is a cost to bringing people in, and the motives, if they can bring them here at 10 times the cost, why don't they stop the war over there?
I hear your point. How can we check the motives? It sounds like that would be the responsible way to respond, to make choices.
If someone says they're coming here for religious reasons, then that's a valid checkpoint. If I'm in a union down at the town hall voting to take $65,000 a year in all my expenses because I like to discriminate against the people I serve, there's a limit to what the property. The most important thing is your family, and you cannot just say I'm for the middle class because it's the retired people and the you're always going to have the poor, but you're going to have to retire someday, and they shouldn't have to pay $10,000 a year to stay here. Why would their kids want to stay here if they got to pay even a percentage of $10,000 to stay in Vermont? I mean, we need to rethink our arbitrary use of democracy and get back to some real conscious caring. You can't save yourself, and so how can you save other people with a higher tax bill?
Well, Ron, I think that's a thoughtful perspective that I hadn't shared before, and I appreciate your calling in and letting us know what you think. Unfortunately, we're getting up close to the top of the hour, and so we're going to move along. Maybe we don't have another call. Maybe that one dropped. We're welcoming. I think we have time for one more call. If you want it to be you, give us a call right now at 244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Being thoughtful about the motives of the folks who are running for office, that seems like a a good job. But you know what makes me think of? It makes me think, Tom, I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but that also puts an onus on the media, doesn't it, to go beyond the surface and not just stick to the noises that are made by people who want the job, but to really probe more deeply.
I guess you need cable for that, the specialty shows
you're
Sunday
suggesting
morning program where, you know, I also like to make cookies. And
You're suggesting that we need to they're doing the probing, or
ones to do the lighter side, the,
I
or
see.
The personality. So it's
I
out
see.
There, but a lot of folks out there. There's the newsmakers, and then there's the lighter side of things.
Yes, that's true.
So it's hard and balance.
It is a tricky balance, and we try to strike it here, and sometimes we succeed, and sometimes it's a little bit more difficult. Coming up at the top of the hour, we are looking forward to hearing from Bill Sayers and his guest, Robert Letofsky. I believe we'll be discussing the upcoming legislative session, and that's coming your way on Common Sense Radio. It starts at 11 o'clock right here, just a few minutes away on WDEV. Right now, though, it's still open mic, as it is every Monday through Friday from 9 until 11 o'clock. And we welcome your calls, 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255. If you have ideas for programs and interviews you'd like to hear, or if there's something going on that you'd like a chance to question a principal in, please give us send us an email. You can write to me at hfuller, F-U-L-L-E-R, at radiovermont.com, and I look forward to hearing and reading those things. And we draw a lot of our ideas for guests and topics from suggestions that our listeners offer. So we hope to hear more from you in the new year, and Mike will be back here tomorrow. Right now, though, it is time for me to let you know you are tuned to WDEV AM 550 in Waterbury, Vermont, FM 96.1 in Warren, Vermont, broadcasting out of Barrie at 96.5 FM, and from Island Pond, 101.9 FM, reaching the kingdom. Those are the frequencies of Radio Vermont, and I'm Hester Fuller, and I'll be back with you in a week or so. Happy New Year.